This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, what environmentalists want from Barack Obama. When the board of the Sierra Club gathered in San Francisco on Saturday to create this year's agenda, there was the kind of anticipation and optimism in the room that they haven't felt in years. Indeed, a message from the Sierra Club's executive director posted on their website says, "I still smile whenever I read or hear the phrase President-elect Obama." Still, campaign promises are one thing. Getting legislation through Congress is another. What can environmentalists and the voters who care about these issues really expect from the new administration? How should the next president prioritize his long, long list of green to-dos? And who will he bring in to get it done? We're going to talk about those questions and those issues with our guest today. And we're joined by two guests who have been thinking quite a lot about this. Allison Chin is president of the Sierra Club. She's in Minnesota to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the North Star chapter of the Sierra Club. And she joins me in the studio. Real pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's a delight to be here.
Ken Cook is with us as well. He's president and co-founder of the Environmental Working Group. And he's with us from Washington. Ken, good to have you back on the show.
Great to be on, Carrie. Thanks for inviting me.
And for our listeners this morning, if environmental issues were part of the reason that you voted for President-elect Obama, what are some of your specific expectations for this administration? What do you think he should move to the top of his list? So if you're listening in this morning, these are the issues around which you made your choices in this recent election. I'd like to know which are your issues that you want to see the administration move quickly on, and what would you put at the top of the list? 800-242-2828. If you're in the metro area, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, as we talk about Barack Obama's very long green to-do list. And if this is one of the reasons that you supported this administration, or these are issues that you really care about, what should he put at the top of the list? Curious to hear your thoughts on that. Now, to my guests, and Allison, I'll start with you. As I mentioned, the board met in San Francisco over the weekend, and I wondered if there were champagne corks being popped all around, because I know you've been waiting for an administration change for a while.
Absolutely. Well, there certainly was a huge air of excitement and a mood of hope. And I think that's what prevailed during this election, you know, hope, Trump fear, the hope of renewable energy, trumping drill, baby, drill.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were excited. And as we turn our attention to, you know, how we work with this new administration to bring about change and restore some of the damage that's been done over the past 8 years, it was one of definite excitement.
As the board met and talked about your list of priorities, tell me just a few of the things that rise immediately to the top that you want to see action on fairly quickly.
Well, it's putting into legislation that's going to promote investing in renewable energy, clean
specifically
technology.
Like what?
Solar, wind, geothermal. Again, really doing the research that's going to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there has to be a transition period in order to, you know, allow us to bring in those sustainable choices. But the other thing is, this is going to be a way to stimulate the economy, to bring jobs to America, to put America's back to work. So that's key.
Ken, I know you have an interesting slogan at your group with how to promote or approach the next administration. Tell me what it is.
It's ask not what Obama can do for you, but what you can do for Obama.
What does that mean?
Well, what it means is we're keying off something President-elect Obama has said many times, citing Frederick Douglass. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and never will. And as we approach this transition period and move into the first months of his presidency, I think it's very important for the environmental community to step back and say, we're going to bring you the same kind of new politics and make things happen politically that you brought to your race for the White House.
Now, what does that mean?
It means we have to be there, not just making demands of him, but demands of others in power who continue to obstruct.
And yet, Ken, you know that there is a lot of, I think I said this in the introduction, there's a lot of pent-up energy because you feel time has slipped by and you not made progress during the last administration.
The last administration has been the worst in history, and it came probably at the worst time in history with respect to the environment. No question about that. And I feel those pent-up demands, I think, as acutely as anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But we made mistakes at the beginning of the Clinton administration, in my opinion, by expecting that simply winning the White House, as we did then, with a president-elect who was far less favorable and understanding of environmental issues than President-elect Obama, we made a mistake and made some assumptions that things were going to be easier than they were. We made some assumptions that the president could shoulder a lot more than he could without help. We made our demands of him, and it's certainly appropriate to hold, no matter who wins the White House or a seat in the Congress, hold them accountable. No question about that. But at the same time, I think this is the point at which, and no one does this better than the Sierra Club, going to the Congress, going to the new administration and saying, yes, we want this new green economy. We want it sooner than later. We have to prove that we can do it. Yes, we want to protect the health of our children. We want to deal with toxic chemicals and pollution, all of those things, wildlife. We want to clean up the agencies, get rid of the corruption. We want to end the revolving door where instead of we've got shill baby shill. We want to end that. But that long list is only possible if we continue to put our shoulder to the wheel. And it's not just putting our shoulder to Barack Obama.
Okay.
It's putting our shoulder to the same politics, the big energy companies, the oil companies, those who would destroy our public lands. We have to show that this president-elect, that we're not just a pleading special interest group who wants him to do what we ask him to do. We're there to fight it out right alongside.
Let me turn back to Allison then. Do you agree with that approach, Allison? And tell me what that means specifically day to day.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And thanks, Ken. One of the things we saw in this last election was the mobilization of thousands, millions of people, you know, really realizing just what was at stake. So folks were out there to elect environmental majorities back into Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely working with your newly elected officials, building those relationships, creating the common understanding of what the goals are. But the people have to be there. We built a huge capacity of interested voters who are ready to take action and who are waiting, you know, waiting on the doorstep to be involved and to learn what that means and actually take action.
Ken, one of the interesting things I noted, though, is when you look at polling both before and after the election and you ask voters, as the researchers did, about what issues they were voting on, environmental issues were down the list. I mean, they were saying things like the economy, health care, the war in Iraq. I mean, there's a lot of things that top that list. I wonder how, with what we're seeing is happening with the economy and also so much demand for change on some of these other big issues, whether you've got that momentum from your supporters, you know, whether you have the urgency of that momentum, I guess I should say, from your supporters with so many other things to get done.
Well, I think there is an urgency, and really we've already touched on it. We have to deal with the economy, and we have to deal with it quickly. There's going to be an infusion of federal money in the form of a stimulus package. We don't know exactly what it's going to focus on or how big it will be.
Mm-hmm.
Over the weekend, we heard a lot of discussion, including from Gene Sperling, that we need to have something more in the order of $500 to $600 billion, not what Speaker Pelosi's been talking about when the new Congress comes to Washington and President Barack Obama's in the White House. A big package. How much of that is going to be green? How much are we going to be investing in retrofitting building? How much are we going to be investing in energy technologies that take us away from fossil fuels and the heavy carbon footprint we now have as an economy? Those kinds of decisions fit within the debate on the economy. They don't pop into voters' minds as necessarily environmental issues.
So you're saying this can be part of the agenda. It doesn't have to be its own separate legislation. Fit it in to all of these other packages.
We have to be smart enough as environmentalists, and we are. I'm convinced that this community has this savvy to fit into that debate about jobs, fit into the debate about health care. How do we prevent emergency room expenses for asthma events that clog emergency rooms, just as our air is clogged in cities around the country during the summertime? Hugely expensive. Lead poisoning, autism, all kinds of diseases like that, most of which have some environmental cause. In order to tackle health care reform, we need to tackle what's coming in the door as a patient, obesity, all kinds of learning disabilities, on and on. I think the environmental community is poised very well to fit into these mainstream arguments. I don't think we insist anymore that someone has to speak out in our language, in our terms, at every opportunity,
okay,
as long as they're advancing the agenda. We know how to fit in.
We have some full phone lines here, so I want to get to the phones. I'm asking our listeners, as you listen to this conversation today with Ken Cook, president and co-founder of the Environmental Working Group, and Allison Chin, president of the Sierra Club in town, to help the North Star Sierra Club chapter celebrate their 40th birthday. So she's in the studio with me today. So as we're having this conversation, I'm asking you, our listeners, if these were issues that you voted on, that you cared about as you made your choice in this last election, or that you've had an ongoing relationship with, where are your priorities and how quickly do you want to see this administration, and I should also say Congress, because our guests are talking about lobbying Congress and state legislatures. They play a strong role in this as well. How quickly do you want movement on this? What moves to the top of your list? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. If you're getting a busy signal, we will get to these calls. I definitely want to hear from you, so be patient with us. And you can always reach us online, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question to Mark in Grand Forks. Hi, Mark. You're up first.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Unfortunately, I think President-elect Obama has already kind of painted himself into a corner here.
With how so?
Regard to financing, well, Senator Dorgan from North Dakota was on Fox News with Chris Wallace yesterday, said so far the bailout that Obama has supported and still supports has consumed $2 to $3 trillion
already. I saw that. Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, including the last 18 months of bailouts and collapses and Fannie Mae and Bear Stearns. So he's already committed $2 to $3 trillion, and he's given a blank check. He's authorized the Treasury to actually just continue funneling money to the Wall Street people who leveraged 40-to-1, falsified the assets on their balance sheets, and collapsed the economy.
So, Mark, you're
he's
concerned.
He's going to be pretty limited in how much he can do for renewables.
So, where's the money going to come from for renewable?
Instead of supporting people like T. Boone Pickens and his emergency plan for wind power and stuff, I would suggest that Obama should close the Treasury door to Wall Street, let them go off the cliff, put the money into the Main Street economy, including renewables, and also make sure that the research and development into things like sequestering carbon, that research paid by taxpayers is owned by taxpayers, that we own proprietary information.
Okay, got
that
it.
Revenue can go into building more wind towers, which should be owned by cities and small businesses, and not people like T. Boone Pickens
okay.
who are looking for
Mark,
a tax break.
I think I've got the angle.
Stuff.
I want to put your points to Allison Chin. Is he right when he says, with what we're facing economically here and the money that has already been spent, there just is not going to be that much money left over for the kind of investment you were talking about?
Well, it's going to be challenging. I mean, there are a lot of things that face us. And, of course, part of President-elect Obama's plan is the auction, to auction the carbon permits, so that we take those who are responsible for creating the pollutions and the toxins, use that money to pay for also developing the research to learn how better to capture that.
That's not an automatic pass.
It is not an automatic
pass. In the House and Senate.
Absolutely.
There's going to be an uphill climb on that, isn't
there? There will. There will. But I think that is an example of the types of legislation that would need to be put in place in order to make this bring about sustainable solutions.
Ken online here from David in St. Paul. Are environmental groups prepared to deliver the constituency pressure that labor and other groups can mobilize and that politicians most respect? By the way, we talked about labor last year. They've got some pretty serious demands, too. A lot of interest groups coming to this administration and saying, all right, we helped you, now you help us. What do you think?
Well, that's right. And James Carville had a saying that campaigns were a time to stab your enemies and transitions were times to stab your friends in the back. And I think everyone is mindful of the fact that in the rush forward to make their case, all of the interest groups that supported President-elect Obama, including a lot of environmentalists, I know the League of Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club both officially endorsed, I assume, Defenders of Wildlife and others who are in that business. We don't get involved in partisan politics. Of course, there are going to be a lot of people who are asking things of this administration. The first thing they'll be asking is favorable consideration during the transition process, good appointments, all very important. Again, I just go back to the point that Allison reinforced, which is we really do have to be able to show that what was mobilized during the course of this election, and that's what's been done by the environmental community over the past 10 years, I would say, is really important to bring to the forefront now, which is the ability to project political influence into the process, to show Senator Obama that he doesn't have to, Senator Obama, President-elect Obama, that he doesn't have to lift all of this on his own. If we can't deliver that, if we can't rally our troops, and we have about 500,000 supporters at the Environmental Working Group now, most of them committed to environmental health issues, once we get to them and say, and put the proposition to them, you either now ask yourself, what can you do to make these policies real? If people don't step up, then other voices that are perhaps louder, perhaps a little more organized, or have deeper ties to the Obama administration incoming, they may have the advantage. So it's on the line. I think those who are, and I congratulate the North Star chapter on their birthday. I know you've got a lot of great environmentalists in Minnesota. This is the time to step up in your councils within the Sierra Club and other organizations. Step up and make your case that you're going to help pull some of this political weight for President-elect Obama and for the Congress,
Allison,
and that we're willing to stand up and fight for the things we believe in.
Allison, I want to read something that Bill McKibben wrote recently, scholar, environmentalist. He wrote on Yale's website right after the election. He said, any hope of succeeding will require Obama to grasp deep in his guts the fact that climate, energy, food, and the economy are hopelessly intertwined, and that trying to solve any one of these problems without taking on the others simply makes them all worse.
Absolutely.
Yes?
Yes. Ken actually referred to this earlier. I mean, it really is all hitched. If you look at the war, you look at health issues, you look at climate change, it really is. Air quality, water quality, the pollution, carbon emissions, you know, our energy use. And it's not just about our consumption. It's about our resources, our sources of renewable energy. So everything is hitched. And, you know, I would also congratulate the North Star chapter of the Sierra Club on their 40th anniversary. It was a fabulous event last night. Lots of leaders from around the state coming together to celebrate 40 years of sustained environmental conservation action. And actually, Kerry, for you, I have their theme was 40 years, 40,000 lights. And so they gave each attendee two compact fluorescent light bulbs to distribute to friends or others to help make a change. These 40,000 light bulbs will help sequester 40 million pounds of carbon emissions.
I'll take your bulbs. I'll put them in here at work at my desk. But let me ask you this. Did you issue a kind of call to action to the people who were there last night, even as they were celebrating 40 years of
Yes.
What'd you say?
We basically said that, you know, we need to be poised. We need to leverage our resources. We need to work together with one another in the club, with our allies, and with new allies. I mean, it is about coordinating the action because
new
you can't have...
New allies like who?
Pardon me?
New allies like who?
Well, certainly we already have established allies like with the Steelworkers and Labor Union, the Blue-Green Alliance, really looking for green jobs, but partners who are willing to work together to bring about change.
I mean, anybody come to mind that you haven't worked with before that you want to form an alliance with?
You know, I don't have that right at hand.
Okay, to the phone.
I could suggest
go ahead,
a couple.
Ken. Yeah.
And I think these are organizations that the club would be working with hand in hand as well. We're working on environmental health issues with medical associations, with nursing associations. They're the front lines of some of our most serious environmental problems, such as a very hot day in Atlanta or Los Angeles or here in Washington, D.C., when elderly people and children pack emergency rooms with asthma attacks. They get it. They understand that health care reform is a very big undertaking that doesn't just involve dealing with health insurance coverage and so forth. That's critical, but we have to make sure that we're not causing more problems and putting more strain on the system. The religious community, we're seeing more and more religious leaders speaking out about the contamination of our bodies with toxic chemicals, including the contamination of babies in the womb. And they're making the case that this is about the sanctity of life, just as much as some the more conventional issue that revolves around that phrase. All of these new connections, in combination with President-elect Obama and the new Congress coming in, Kerry, this is our time to step up and demonstrate leadership. We want to be bold. We want this economic rescue or bailout, however you think of it, to be as green as it can possibly be. We have to go to people who have not been allies in the past, who have been swing voters in Congress,
mm-hmm.
make the case to them that this is for the long term. If you're starting to retrofit residential buildings and office buildings and government buildings, this is going to return dividends for decades. And we need to think that way.
Here's an online question that may put some of this to the test from Lauren in St. Paul. She says, why are environmental groups so timid in opposing increases in what she says are enormously expensive nuclear energy plants? Obama remains open to this horrible prospect. Now, when you would hear Barack Obama talk about nuclear power, he would say he does think it needs to be in the, you know, on the table here, but he wants to see new technology to make it safer. Does he have the right approach on nuclear power, or environmental groups saying we can't countenance that no matter how the technology changes?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I don't think the two folks you have on the call here, the Sierra Club and the Environmental Working Group, are timid at all. We don't think nuclear makes any sense. We don't think it
ever, no matter how the technology has changed.
Well, it remains to be seen if the technology has changed that we really need.
Obama's saying he's open to it, Ken.
Well, the reactor technology, there are some new reactor technologies, but the technology for dealing with the waste has not changed.
That's bad. That's the key.
We can find energy sources that you don't have to guard for 10,000 years after you've used them. We can do better than that. And I think that what I read President-elect Obama is saying in his campaign pronouncement is that he is open if we can solve these problems. Republicans, remember, during the campaign were criticizing him for saying basically that what he's saying is tantamount to no more nuclear power. They were saying if the technology is there is a code word that President-elect Obama is using that really means we're not going to do anything because the reactor technologies maybe that could be more efficient. Maybe we'll have a little less waste. But basically what he's saying is proliferation and waste storage and disposal and transportation, all of those things are deeply problematic. There's no technical solutions on the horizon.
Let me turn back to Allison here. Allison, what if Senator Obama is persuaded that nuclear power should not be completely off the table? And as he creates an energy policy, nuclear power has some role in that. Are environmentalist groups going to rise up and say that's not what you promised us and we can't countenance that and we're going to work against you?
I agree that his proposal is that, you know, everything is on the table to be considered if you can develop the technology to make it cost effective. Waste is a huge issue there. And even as we look at things like biofuels, I mean, is that really a sustainable source for energy consumption as opposed to food and agriculture? So you have to balance, again, with what exists today, with what can be, you know, we haven't really invested.
But I don't think you're answering
seriously
my question, which is that if he remains open.
If he remains open, I think, you
how
know.
How will environmentalist groups react to that? How about the Sierra Club?
We will watch and wait and see. I mean, we are not in support, and we also do not see it as a long-term solution, as a sustainable solution with current technologies.
So you'd oppose that if that was part of the energy policy, or you'd keep an open mind?
I think we'd keep an open mind.
Okay. To the phones, to Jerry in Stillwater. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, good morning.
Your question.
Well, actually, it applies to almost every point you guys have talked about.
Okay.
I've been a researcher in alternative energy since the 70s, and I've developed the theory over the years that if we were half as good at using less as we are at finding more, we'd be in a lot less of a pickle than we are.
Okay.
And as much as I like alternative energy, it is still a form of finding more. Nuclear is probably the worst idea of finding more. Right now, the sentiment is toward let's drill, let's find, let's do nukes. We need more energy. And the reason that, you know, conservation could solve a lot of problems, the supply problem and the way the environment, the food supply, the water supply is all together, those would all be made better if we just used less.
Jerry, I think you've raised an interesting point. Hang on just one second, because I want to turn it back to Ken and ask him. Jerry is saying, Ken, talk more openly and forthrightly about conserving. Should the president do that? Because politicians have a tendency to shy away from that.
They have had since Jimmy Carter donned the Carter sweater at the White House and talked about the malaise. No, I think Jerry's absolutely right, Carrie. We do need to invest in what we in the environmental community call megawatts, the cheapest energy, the most effective energy for the environment and for reducing carbon loading that causes global warming. The most effective way to develop that energy is to not develop it at all, is to invest in conservation. We think there should be a multi-billion-dollar program, just for starters, on retrofitting buildings. Better windows, better insulation, better appliances, straightforward things that are on the shelf now. If we invested enough money into that, we could knock down energy expenses for real American families day in and day out for the next two decades.
But Ken, I'm saying, what do you want the president to say about that?
I want him to say that when he invests in Main Street, one of the things he's going to be investing in is helping people make their homes and businesses and hospitals and schools much more energy efficient.
Why shouldn't he just come out and say, hey, look, Americans, use less. Use less gasoline, use less electric. Why are presidents so reluctant and politicians so reluctant to do that?
I'm not sure President-elect Obama will be so reluctant to do that, but I do think that there's an opportunity here for him, and he's such a great communicator. If anyone could do it, he can.
All right, let me bring Jerry back. Jerry, have we gotten it at the essence of what you were asking about?
Well, the first part of it, but
okay.
Then your last question, I can kind of answer. The reason all politicians are reluctant to say that is nobody makes any money that way.
Hmm.
So all he really needs to do is find some ways. I mean, there's always the tax credit, but that's not really it.
But to make this more profitable.
Find some way for the capitalistic system to make money from people using less energy.
Allison, yes.
Well, one of the exciting things is this is something that everyone can take responsibility for. So we were talking earlier about, you know, sharing the responsibility, taking on the responsibility, and also demonstrating that individual actions, you know, collectively are a very powerful force.
We're talking this hour with Allison Chin, president of the Sierra Club. Ken Cook is also joining us. He's president and co-founder of the Environmental Working Group. We're going to take a break for news. When we come back, continue our conversation. Still full phone lines here. We'll get to these calls, then I want to get to yours. Think about where you prioritize this long, long list of green to-dos, and how quickly do you want the administration to move on this, and what can you do? Ken Cook is saying that they have a slogan within their organization, do not ask what Obama can do for you, ask what you can do for Obama. So if you want to think about that, it'd be good to have your perspective on that as well. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. If you're getting a busy signal, reach us online at minnesotapublicradio.org and click on Send a Question. Back in just a moment to the newsroom. And Perry Finelli, good morning, Perry.
Kerry, Citigroup is cutting another 53,000 jobs in coming quarters after suffering massive losses from deteriorating debt. Meanwhile, the Fed says industrial output rose more than expected in October after plunging in September by the largest amount in more than 60 years. Democrats hope to use the lame duck session of Congress to come up with a bailout plan for American automakers. They'll need at least a dozen Senate Republicans to support the bill, too, but the numbers might not be there. The White House says it supports help for the auto industry, but not from the $700 billion financial bailout package. President Bush called Libya's leader to voice his satisfaction with a $1.5 billion payment made to settle a long-standing dispute over terrorist attacks, including the bombing of a Pan Am jet over Scotland. It was the last hurdle in restoring full diplomatic relations between Washington and Tripoli. Thanks to better weather, California firefighters are making progress on three major wildfires still burning around Los Angeles. The cause of all three is still under investigation, but state officials say a Santa Barbara area fire was human-caused. A University of Minnesota civil engineering professor this week will talk about the school's independent study of the 35W bridge collapse. Robert Ballerini will give preliminary results of the school's investigation of the bridge collapse, which is separate from the official investigation released last week by the National Transportation Safety Board. The search continues for a suspect in the shooting death of a 15-year-old St. Paul boy. Police are seeking the public's help in finding 19-year-old Alfredo Gutierrez Gonzalez, who is wanted for questioning. Jacob McKenzie was killed early Sunday morning at his home on the city's west side. High temperatures around the state today, low 20s to low 30s. Some scattered snow showers, mainly in eastern Minnesota. Twin Cities now mostly sunny, temperatures 26. It's 9:36. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota Public Radio invites you to a rather snappy holiday show at the Fitzgerald Theater. Join John Munson, Sham Poling, and Steve Rome as the New Standards perform with a large ensemble of friends. Mason Jennings will be stopping by, along with Lucy Michelle and Matt Wilson, just to name a few. This engaging show is on Saturday night, December 6th. The program's been growing every year, so get your tickets early by calling the Fitzgerald box office at 651-290-1221.
Programming is supported by Pentair, a Minnesota-based diversified company with 15,000 employees. Pentair's products are designed to help create safe, clean water worldwide and protect electronic and electric equipment and the people using it. Pentair.com.
We're back on Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Mike Ferris is going to be in the studio with us. He's a Minnesota biologist and a high-altitude climber. He was on K2 on the border of Pakistan last year when 11 climbers were either swept away by an avalanche or fell to their deaths or died from exposure. We're going to talk about the value of high altitude climbing. There were some questions after that accident, of course, the disasters that have occurred on Everest, about why people do this anymore. A lot of this terrain has already been explored. And he's written an interesting book about what happens to your body and your brain at high altitude when you go up above 8,000 feet, as he has done many times. He's been climbing for 30 years. So Mike Ferris in the studio with us. Also want to let you know, while we're talking about environmentalism this hour and the new administration, on Wednesday morning, we're going to talk about this idea of sacrifice. You hear President-elect Obama hinting about this, nibbling around the edges of how Americans might sacrifice. I'm going to ask you how you'd frame that. Sacrifice, what kind of shape would that take in your own life? And what do you think he ought to ask for? That's Wednesday at 9 when we talk about sacrifice. Back to our conversation this hour. Allison Chin in the studio with me this morning. She's in town. She's president of the Sierra Club and in town to help the North Star Sierra Club here in Minnesota celebrate its 40th anniversary. And Ken Cook has joined us from Washington. He's president and co-founder of the Environmental Working Group. Ken, an interesting question here. Online to go back to our calls here from Jonathan in Minneapolis says, are your guests expecting Obama to be proactively pro-environment or just not so anti-environment as Bush? How would you answer that?
Pro-environment, actively pro-environment. And I think part of it is because he understands, as Allison said so well, that all of these things are connected. He doesn't want to have an economic policy that doesn't have an environmental dimension, doesn't want to have a healthcare policy, in my view, that doesn't take into consideration some of the causes of our health problems that are environmental.
So actively pro-environment.
So I think he'll be okay. Actively pro-environment, and I think his leadership will make that clear when he announces cabinet positions. I don't think we'll be seeing lobbyists from industry in charge of the industries they used to work for. I don't think we'll see that revolving
as
door.
With the EPA.
Right. Uh-huh. EPA has been through a terrible 8 years, low morale, Food and Drug Administration, Interior Department. In all of these places, the corruption has been really off the charts. And I think one of the first things he'll do is restore some confidence that there will be impartial scientific and technical expertise brought to bear on these environmental issues.
Ken, when you say corruption, now that's the second time you've used that word. I don't think you mean criminal fraud. I mean, corruption, do you?
Well,
because nobody's been prosecuted that I can recall at the top of these agencies.
No, at the very top of the agency, I'm blanking on his name now because he served time in prison, the guy who was convicted at the number two at the Interior Department. No, there has been that kind of corruption. Where there's a major investigation underway now of staff at the Mineral Management Service who accepted all kinds of favors, including sexual favors in return for consideration from people seeking oil and gas drilling rights and so forth. So there has been that kind of thing. At the Food and Drug Administration, they've brought in industry experts to write reviews of the chemicals that are supposedly going to be regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Some of these things go back before the Bush administration and needed to be fixed even earlier. But the truth of the matter is this has been a free-for-all period for companies dealing with environmental issues where I think the dare that they must have had when they met together as lobbyists was who can get away with the most? And the Bush administration, time and again, let them get away with some shocking things.
Allison is shrinking back here a little bit, Ken. Do you agree with that, Allison, or would you not go as far as that?
Well, I actually think that's an interesting perspective on it.
Do you think it's
true,
though?
Yeah, I think it's true.
You do.
There's also just corruption of our values, not sharing the concerns, values, and a vision for middle America. So it's really about refocusing.
You live in San Francisco, and
I used to. I actually just recently moved.
Oh, you did? To
Northern Virginia.
Oh, okay. So you used to live in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And there is talk in President-elect Obama's transition team that he will quickly move to reverse the Bush administration's decision to deny California the authority to regulate carbon dioxide emissions.
That would be very, very positive.
He could do that. I mean, he could do that on day one if he wanted
That's
to.
Right.
What I'm curious about is, do you think more states would then follow to put in those kinds of regulations without waiting for a federal mandate?
I really do. I think that waiver would be fabulous. It would allow a lot of states to provide the leadership that people are looking for. Again, integrally tied into, affordable energy, our economy, our jobs.
But the car companies are not going to lay down for that. I mean, they have opposed this.
But that's why we need to move forward. I mean, President-elect Obama has also talked about, helping to build the infrastructure for car companies to, bring online cars that are more efficient and have better efficiencies. And so it's that infrastructure in the technology that does not yet exist.
Ken, you think, they're talking about a bailout. We're going to talk for the automotive industry. We're going to talk about that later this week. Should green technology and demands for cleaner technology and maybe going towards this waiver that we're talking about in California that other states may follow, should that be tied, do you think, to any money that the federal government loans or gives to car makers?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the accusations that's often made of environmentalists is that we don't understand business or economics. And if you look at what the auto industry is going through now, I would make the case, and I would say the Sierra Club was in the forefront of making the case, that for years Detroit wouldn't listen to those of us who were saying fuel economy is an important thing for you to invest in. They were making too much money with those big vehicles, and they said, look, the market will solve this problem. There are plenty of small cars out there. People just don't want them. Well, it turns out now that people do want small cars. They just don't want the ones that are made by Detroit. We're buying cars from Asian makers like crazy because they get better fuel economy and they're better cars. And I think for us to give a wake-up call to the industry now when they're coming forward hat in hand, tin cup in hand, is a major mistake. I think something that Mark from Grand Forks said earlier is giving taxpayers an ownership interest in these kinds of bailouts is really important. And one of the things we should ask Detroit to do is make good on the potential that's right before us.
And tie it to this bailout that the car companies. Okay.
That's right.
Let me go back to the phones here to Mike in Minneapolis. Mike, thanks for waiting.
Okay, hydrogen is the Rosetta Stone that will solve all our problems. I'll give you three organizations your friends should look up and contact that will solve this problem. You can now install on-demand hydrogen in your car that will increase your gas mileage 50%. That's the solution to the car manufacturers right now to get their market going. Now, you can also go to a company called Hydrotech that creates these devices. I'm sending for one, and I'm going to put it in my car.
So you want more, Mike, is it fair to say you want more interest and investment in hydrogen on the car companies?
There's a company in Ontario called Exogen who's now building their first plant. It's a wastewater management treatment. Hydrogen will purify water. At the same time, create hydrogen, which will turn turbines, which will generate electricity.
Okay.
There's a guy named George Weissman out of Eagle Research in Utah who has demonstrated that hydrogen will neutralize radioactive isotopes.
Let me ask my guests about how big of a priority this is for their organizations. Allison, to you.
I don't know. I'm not that up to date on, you know, exactly the
different
state of the research with hydrogen. It's different technology. I know that we've talked about it for so many years.
Yes.
And it's not yet at a scale that, you know, everyday America can use.
Yeah, Ken, this is something that the Bush administration a couple of years ago said that they really wanted to see some momentum around. And immediately other organizations came out and said it's impractical. It won't work. What do you know about this?
Well, I mean, the concern at the time was that rather than take the action we knew we could take with technology that was already here, hybrid technology, for example, I think the concern that when the Bush administration made this such a big emphasis that it would be over the horizon where we'd see the benefits, true enough, but it seemed like a stalling tactic to many of us who felt that this was just a way to put off making tough decisions that might have affected Detroit. Of course, gasoline prices then went sky high, and that had its own effect on Detroit. I think the real point here is we need to aim for the goal and not try and necessarily pick the technology as experts, non-experts outside that area of technical expertise.
All right, let me go back to the phones here to Andrew in St. Paul. Hi, Andrew.
Oh, hey, I wanted to say transportation sector in the United States uses anywhere from a third to a half of all petroleum and produces between a third and a half of greenhouse gases if you factor in production and disposal of vehicles. And I haven't heard anything said about public transit, and that's something that I would hope from this administration, which is that they are going to reauthorize federal transportation spending next year, and I would hope that the lion's share would go to public transit, to better land use so that we can have communities that sustain public transit where there's adequate density and these kinds of things. And I think that's something where labor and environmental groups can work together. I mean, we should have a company that's building transit cars in the United States. We don't have one, instead of subsidizing Detroit. And we'd be creating a lot of jobs, and it's a kind of a stealth way in which environmentalists can reduce carbon and have some impact.
Andrew, you've raised a good question here. And Ken, let me turn it to you. Do you think the administration should come out with a support for an increase in the federal gas tax so it can raise more money for the kind of transit projects that Andrew's talking about?
I do think that makes sense. And many people,
you think he'll do it?
I don't know if he'll do it or not, but I think he's going to be hearing from a lot of people that raising that tax makes sense now. We've gone through a period of high gasoline energy prices. It's dipped back down. Of course, that's relief for some people, and we need to be mindful that those who are most dependent on automobiles and are low income need to be considered in any tax effort. But I do think it's a good idea to lock in some of those higher prices through taxes and reinvest. And I would invest in mass transit, specifically in rail-type technologies,
right,
if it were up to me.
Allison, what did you think when gas prices were up way above $3 a gallon and the Republicans' campaign seemed to be picking up some momentum as drill, baby, drill became the call on the campaign trail, and Americans were saying in polls that they wanted more domestic drilling, and House Democrats, Speaker Pelosi, got somewhat on board with that, and now President-elect Obama was saying that he's willing to consider that.
You know, I'm going to go back to sustainable solutions. There, you know, it's not the immediate fix. And, you know, drilling translates into energy years down the line. Not only that, we just don't have – that's not the renewable source or sustainable source.
But I'm wondering, were you disappointed that House Democrats and Senator Obama felt like they had to get on board with that?
We were disappointed with that. You know, I mean, there's no question about that. But what Andrew raises with transit, I mean, it's absolutely essential. Paying attention again to the way our communities have been established and trying to find, you know, long-term solutions for people to make their way around. You know, it's interesting because it comes back to that responsibility, the personal responsibility. When gas prices were high, probably many of us changed and altered our behavior. I know I saw more people on the train, mm-hmm. you know, on buses. And the questions, or now thinking about using bike as commuting. So can we stick to those habits? Can we make those permanent changes?
I should say that one of the reasons that you're here, along with honoring the 40th anniversary of the North Star Club here, is also to honor six Minnesota Republican legislators, right, for
That's
voting
correct.
to override Governor Pawlenty's transportation bill mm-hmm. veto.
That's
you
right.
know that that money is going to, it's not just going to go for transit, it's going to build more infrastructure around here. I mean, more pavement, more lanes.
But it's also committed funds to looking at,
it is,
you know,
but
transit lines, rail lines. You
so
know.
Why honor that? Why honor that vote?
Because that was about, again, you know, elected officials. I mean, this is an example of why it makes such a difference who we elect into office. These are officials who are willing to, you know, put some personal political capital at risk in order to listen to the people and deliver to the people what they need.
Online here, Ken from Andrew, Minneapolis says, I've heard Robert Kennedy mentioned to head up the EPA. Do you know anything about that? He says, personally, I feel this would be an excellent appointment.
You know, there's a rumor a minute about who is going to be on transition for EPA, who's going to be on that team, and then who might eventually be appointed to the many positions there and other federal agencies that have environmental purviews. I have no idea.
Well, who would you like to see head up EPA? You probably have some names in mind.
Well, I don't know if by naming them I would condemn them to never having a shot or if I would advance their interests.
Well, why would that be? Why would you condemn them to never having – again, yours is an interest group that helped elect Barack Obama.
Well, we did not play any role. We don't do political action here.
Your voters care and they vote, right?
That's right. I think people who are concerned about the environment want to have a strong leader. And I think at this point we have to let the Obama transition team figure out their short list and figure out who they want to proceed with. I have friends who want to go into the administration. I don't want to name them on the air here because I think that they would do a terrific job, but I don't think they're campaigning for this. They want to make their case to the Obama team in the best possible way they can, and I'm not sure, Carrie, in all due deference, I'm not sure the best way to do that is for their names to be announced on the radio.
All right. Online here from Dave in Finland says, environmental is a polarizing term. How does the Sierra Club and other environmental organizations change this PR issue to appeal to more citizens than their base? Allison, do you agree with the premise of that? Is he right in some ways about that?
I guess I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, of course, my circle is very, very different.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think environmental may be something that we actually take for granted and overlook as opposed to personalizing. It's why I'm in the Sierra Club and why I and so many leaders, you know, the local leaders, North Star Chapter, have continued to give and give and give for change to protect it.
Ken, broadening the base. I mean, this is something that comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the hour. How do you do it?
Well, I think one way you do it is try and go to people and their issues and their concerns from their perspective. Try and put yourself in their shoes. That's why I think it's so important to speak to religious leaders about their concerns about how we might be polluting God's creation. How we go to medical professionals and talk to them about what they're seeing coming in the doors of the emergency room or into their practice every day. I think understanding it from their perspective is absolutely crucial. environmentalists maybe have gotten a bad name in some circles because we've been so demonized by opponents of any kind of government role, any kind of involvement on the part of the government with regulating.
And that attitude has probably changed a little bit with the financial collapse, right?
Of course it has. That's exactly my point, that it's one thing to declaim that regulation is a bad thing when it's affecting your business by requiring you to take a few extra steps to protect the environment, and then turn right around and put your hand out for money from taxpayers and have them intervene to the tune of trillions of dollars and say that that's an adequate form of government intervention. That's, I think, what this has shown in the last year or so. With the increase in oil prices, the collapse in the financial markets, it's shown that we do have to rethink what we consider to be an acceptable role for government. And there is an acceptable role. Barack Obama believes that. And in pursuing it, I have a lot of confidence that he is going to look at every opportunity he can to do it in a green way.
We'll see. Ken, good to have you, as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carrie. My pleasure.
Ken Cook, president and co-founder of the Environmental Working Group. Allison, thank you very much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Allison Chin, president of the Sierra Club. And again, to mention, she's in Minnesota to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the North Star chapter of the Sierra Club. So happy birthday to them. At 10, we're talking with Mike Ferris. He's a high-altitude climber and a biologist at a local university. He's written a book called The Altitude Experience. We're going to talk about the changes that occur in your body and in your brain as you go above 8,000 feet. He's also got some very interesting personal experiences to share. He was on K2 last year when disaster struck for a group of climbers who were trying to summit. That's a mountain on the border of Pakistan, one of the highest in the world. And so we'll talk about lessons learned from that experience and his role as word filtered back to some of the climbers that were at the bottom of the mountain about what had happened to this group of climbers. That's coming up at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, the nuts and bolts of the recount. Secretary of State Mark Ritchie is going to be one of our guests. As you know, the canvassing board meets tomorrow. We're going to talk about details of how this actually gets done as the recount starts on Wednesday and some of the challenges that may follow the recount. So if you heard our conversation with Al Franken on Friday telling us that he'll have observers at a lot of these locations, all of these locations, as will incumbent Senator Norm Coleman, to watch the recount occur. So we'll be talking about what they'll be watching for and what Secretary of State Mark Ritchie himself will be watching for. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 10. Have you checked out the mid-morning book page? I'd like you to do that, because if you're interested in coming to our Talking Volumes event on Thursday night, all the information there about Thursday night with Wally Lamb at the Fitz, and all our information about our whole schedule. We've got Nikki Giovanni coming in at the end of January, Michael Greenberg, who's written a terrific nonfiction book about his daughter's mental illness. We have Rita Dove completing the season. Just some great authors. You can find all that info on the Mid-Morning book page, and I hope you'll take a look at it. This is Mid-Morning.
Programming is supported by Minnesota State Colleges and University System. 81% of graduates work or continue their education in Minnesota. We educate Minnesota. We make it work. Online at mnscu.edu.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio.